President Clark, members of the Board of Trustees, President Wilkinson, members of the faculty, graduates, and honored guests. It is indeed a great honor and privilege to meet with you on this memorable occasion. And I trust that I may measure up to the introduction which I have been given by President Clark. What he has said makes this indeed a humbling experience for me. It is a great privilege to meet with your many friends in expressing congratulations upon the completion of your work at this great institution of learning. I am expected, I suppose, to deliver a sermon to you. In order to do that, I will have to rely upon inspiration from heaven, and that will necessitate your faith and your prayers in my behalf. I do not think I need to remind you that this is the anniversary of the birth of one of the greatest figures and personalities that ever appeared on the stage of mortal activity. Just 151 years ago today, Brigham Young was born in a humble cottage in the state of Vermont. I understand that his schoolroom education was confined to just 11 days. And yet you here are graduating from a great university which bears his name and which he founded. Under his direction, another university was established, and other schools and other colleges. And they were established in a territory which was at the time a wilderness and 1,000 miles or more distant from civilization. He was a great leader in the field of education, and you tonight and all of us are the beneficiaries of his leadership and of his interest in educational pursuits. Brigham Young knew that the desert could not be conquered and made to blossom as the rose without schools. He knew that education was a necessary part in the great program of building a commonwealth in the midst of these Rocky Mountains. He expected that the children of the saints receive at least the rudiments of an education, and he had little respect for any parent who would not make sacrifices to enable a child to receive some scholastic training. Brigham Young was a man among men. His character was made up of many facets, and every facet was brilliant because every facet reflected spiritual, heavenly, and eternal light. He was a master among men. In leadership, he was masterful. As a great pioneer leader, he stands preeminent in history. He was masterful in everything that he did. And he was a great leader because he had devoted and loyal followers, and because he himself had learned to be a devoted follower to another leader, another prophet of God, whom he succeeded. Had he not learned to follow that leadership, he himself could never have succeeded as a leader among the children of God. Willingness to follow is one of the distinguishing marks of leadership. And unless one learns to follow, he can never be effective nor successful as a leader. Brigham Young was a great leader. He was chief among his people because he was their servant. And as Christ said, he who would be chief among you, let him be your servant. And everything that he did, he served his people, but he knew he could not serve them without first serving his God. And in serving his God, God made manifest through him his will and his purposes for his children here upon the earth, for his saints. I'm reminded of an incident that occurred under the reign of King Sethos, an early king of Egypt. This incident is recorded in the account of Herodotus, the Greek historian, who wrote so well and so descriptively of Egypt and her people. In this story, he tells that Sethos had little regard for the army, for the military profession. He neglected the army. He deprived them of the benefits they had received from former kings. And as a result, his army did not support him in his hour of need. When the Arabians learned that Sethos was without an army, they mustered their forces together and proceeded against Egypt. Naturally, Sethos was frightened. But in the silence of the night, he saw the image of the oracle of God. And the oracle spoke to Sethos, and he believed the oracle. The oracle said, "Go out and meet the enemy, and you will come out victorious." He mustered what help he could get from the merchants and the artisans of his kingdom, and they went out upon the plains to meet the great host of Arabians. And when they arrived where they had expected to engage in battle with the enemy, they beheld the enemy in flight. And as they looked about, they discovered the reason. Mice had come upon the field during the night and had destroyed the bows, the arrows, the handles of the spears, and left the Arabians without any implements for battle. They fled before Sethos. Many of them were killed. And later, in the temple of Hephaestus, there was a statue in stone of this king Sethos. And in his hand, there was carved a mouse. And on the base of the statue were these words: "Let those who look upon me learn to fear the gods." This reminds me of that early event in the history of this church, one which should be in our minds this night, the event which brought about the expulsion of the saints from their comfortable homes in Nauvoo after the assassination of their great leader. And as they left those homes and faced westward, crossing the overfrozen Mississippi, they went, no doubt, with some fear in their hearts. But at the head of the pioneer caravan stood that man of God, Brigham Young. Brigham Young knew that the oracle had spoken. He knew that on the 6th day of August in the year 1842 at Montrose, Iowa, the prophet Joseph Smith had said to the few who were gathered around him that the time would come when the people would be driven beyond the Rocky Mountains and become a great commonwealth among those hills. Brigham Young believed in that oracle, and so they headed westward with hope in their hearts, with an assurance that all would be well. And as a result of following the oracle of God, victory came to their great and noble and trying efforts. And they came to these valleys, and some years later, there was erected at the head of Main Street in Salt Lake City a monument of Brigham Young. And well could the words which were inscribed upon the statue of Sathos in the temple of Hephaestus be inscribed upon that monument: "Let all who look upon me learn to fear the gods." There is no victory of value, my young friends, unless we follow the oracle of God, unless we listen to the voice. And when we listen to that voice and follow that which it says, then all who look upon us shall learn to fear the gods. You know what the picture was on that eventful day in July when he stood at the mouth of the canyon and looked over the God-forsaken desert and said, "This is the place." You know there were no trees growing. There were no shrubs. There were no prospects from man's vision that they could survive. But they knew they would survive. And he did say, "This is the place." And he knew that down in that valley, there would be built a temple to the Most High God, and that all nations would be invited to come up to that temple, that they might learn of his ways and walk in his paths. That temple stands there today because the oracle had spoken. And you and I are here because the oracle spoke. And all who look down upon these valleys today, who see the trees and the grass and the homes and the schools, can say, "Let those who behold this great vision learn to fear the gods." Whether you be Jew or Catholic or Methodist or Baptist or whatever your religion might be, if you are here enjoying the blessings of the environs of these mountains, all who look upon you must learn to fear the God of heaven, because you are here only because the oracle of God spoke and the voice was listened to and the instructions followed. Great, my young friends, is your heritage. You are going out into the world to face problems more perplexing than any that have ever engaged the ingenuity, the genius, and intelligence of the generations which have preceded you. You are going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. You're going to cry for peace, and there will be no peace. You are going to learn of casualties of loved ones on the battlefields far away. and these casualties will affect your homes. They will be casualties which will take the lives of your own kith and kin. And the reason for all this is not too clear. Great will be the problems which you will have to solve. But you will meet the challenge because you know the oracle speaks and because you follow the voice of the oracle. Oh, you have studied in this school. You have pored over the books and the texts under the leadership and direction of good and faithful men and women. But what you have studied from books, you may soon forget. But the impress upon your lives of the personalities, of the characters, of those who have taught you can never be erased from your souls. And above all, you will remember as you proceed through life the great spiritual forces which this faculty has turned loose upon this campus and which have touched your lives, so that this will be the great actuating impulse in all that you do. If there had not been woven in the fabric of your education these spiritual threads, you would not now be leaving this campus with a solid foundation upon which to build for the future success of yourselves in the society with which you will mingle. And when you seek to acquire material wealth, and if you do acquire it, you will learn that the spiritual riches you have taken from the Brigham Young University are of more value, more eternal value, than the wealth of the world. You have a great opportunity to bless humanity. There are wildernesses yet to conquer. There are deserts which should yet blossom as the rose. There are deserts within the souls of men and wild places in their hearts because they have divested from their souls spiritual impulses. You must carry over into their lives that richness which you have taken from this campus. Some of you may have found God for the first time within the environs of this great campus. I am sure that none of you has lost Him here. It could have been different had you gone to other schools, had you been learning at the feet of other teachers. Teachers of philosophy, teachers of psychology, teachers of the sciences. But in this school, you find God because every instructor goes to the classroom invoking the Spirit of the Lord to direct him in teaching you whatever principles of learning an academic instruction you desire to acquire. There are great values in life. You know what those values are. I would like to read, if I may, a few words which were delivered to the students of Harvard University by the great educator Charles W. Eliot. He enumerated in this talk what he termed the durable satisfactions of life. And I would like to pass on to you some of his ennobling thoughts. First, he asked, for educated men, what are the sources of the solid and durable satisfactions of life? I hope you are all aiming at the solid, durable satisfactions of life, not primarily the gratifications of this moment or of tomorrow, but the satisfactions that are going to last and grow. So far as I have seen, there is one indispensable foundation for the satisfaction of life: health. A young man ought to be a clean, wholesome, vigorous creature. That is the foundation of everything else, and I hope you will all be that if you are nothing more. We have to build everything in this world of domestic joy and professional success, everything of a useful, honorable career, on bodily wholesomeness and vitality. This being a clean, wholesome, vigorous creature involves a good deal. It involves not condescending to the ordinary barbaric vices. One must avoid drunkenness, gluttony, licentiousness, and getting into dirt of any kind in order to be clean, wholesome, and vigorous. It is a wholesome thing to enjoy for a time, or for a time each day, all through life, sports and active bodily exercise. These are legitimate enjoyments, but if made the main object of life, they tire. They cease to be a source of durable satisfaction. What is the next thing, then, that we want in order to make sure of durable satisfactions in life? We need a strong mental grip, a wholesome capacity for hard work. But there is something more, something beyond this acquired power of intellectual labor. As Shakespeare puts it, the purest treasure mortal times afford is spotless reputation. How is that treasure won? It comes by living with honor on honor. Most of you have begun already to live honorably and honored, for the life of honor begins early. Some things the honorable man cannot do, never does. He never wrongs or degrades a woman. He never oppresses or cheats a person weaker or poorer than himself. He never betrays a trust. He is honest, sincere, candid, and generous. It is not enough to be honest. An honorable man must be generous. And I do not mean generous with money only. I mean generous in his judgments of men and women and of the nature and prospects of mankind. Such generosity is a beautiful attribute of the man of honor. In his concluding remarks, he gives this counsel: mark it well, my young friends. Look forward to the important crises of your life. They are nearer than you are apt to imagine. It is a very safe, protective rule to live today as if you were going to marry a pure woman within a month. That rule you will find a safeguard for worthy living. It is a good rule to endeavor hour by hour and week after week to learn to work hard. How well you and I know, my brothers and sisters of the graduating class, that there is truth and wisdom in what this great educator has set forth as the sources of the durable satisfactions of life. And what he says to the young men may also be said to the young women. Live each day as if you were going to marry a pure man within a month, and you are entitled to expect the same purity from your man whom you will marry as the woman as you are the men to expect from your woman companion in life. There are other sources of these durable and eternal satisfactions in life which he has not enumerated, but Brigham Young would have enumerated more to you. He would have mentioned to you this business of praying to God, of invoking his divine aid this afternoon in the testimony meeting of the seniors. I heard one senior, a young lady, testify that as she knelt at the side of a bed of a sick friend and held her hand and offered up her prayer to God, that friend was released from pain and peace came into her mind. That is one of the eternal verities. There is no greater source of satisfaction, no greater source of blessings which you may need as you go out into the world than praying to God your Father. Obedience to the principles of the gospel. This institution belongs to you because your obedience to the gospel supports and maintains it. Do not forget to honor the Lord with the substance which you acquire when you go forth from this institution of learning, because from that source and that substance, God will be able to finance this His great university, which is destined to be the greatest of all universities of its kind, or any kind, in all the world. Keep the testimonies of the gospel, which you now have, and which many of you have acquired here at this school. Another senior bore his testimony today and said, I received a testimony of the divinity of the Book of Mormon here. Why, that is worth all the sacrifice and effort which that young man has made to come to this school. The testimonies of your teachers should ring true and carry conviction in your hearts and anchor you to your faith as long as you shall live upon this fair earth. Be faithful to your ideals. Be loyal. Be active in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The church needs the vigor and vitality of your youth. It received its first great foundation from youth. The average age of the first quorum of the 12 in this dispensation was 29 years. The first council of the 12 in this dispensation. You young men, you bear the priesthood of Almighty God. Exercise that priesthood for the building up of His kingdom. His power can come through you. Healing may be in your hand and will be if you will claim from God the power which your priesthood entitles you to claim from Him. I leave a witness with you that I know with all my heart that God lives, that man is made in His image. I know that you who have studied science someday will listen to your professors of science beg your pardon for having taught to you things which have become obsolete because science changes from day to day. But the truths of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the words of the oracle of God, are always new and always fresh, and they never change. Be actuated in your lives by a sincere testimony of the truth of the gospel. You are supposed to be missionaries as you go forth, whether you be men or whether you be women. What the world needs today is a message from heaven. They are crying out for such a message. They want to hear the voice of the oracle. You carry that message to your friends, to your neighbors, and you will be engaged in that service which will bring about the regeneration of the souls of men, and which will enable them to dwell with you in the celestial presence of our Father in heaven. And as I stand here in the presence of these men of God who occupy these seats, these great men who have been called from their vocations and their professions in life to be your servants, I want to testify to you that they are God's chosen servants, that they do represent Him, that they will never lead you astray if you will listen to them, because through them the oracle of God continues to speak. Let all who look upon them learn to fear the gods. Let all who look upon you learn to fear God. And may His Spirit be your abiding companion, direct you in all you undertake to do. And may I repeat again, so live as if you were going to marry a pure man or a pure woman within a month. Be humble before God, and He will magnify you before men. God bless you and your future activities in life. May your worthy desires be realized. May the hidden desires of your heart, which are righteous, come to you, and come they will, if you will invoke the aid of your Father in heaven, whose Spirit permeates this great university. And thus I pray for you and for us all, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.